Hi, David.
Hi, Jasmine.
Welcome to a new episode of the Workaround podcast. My name is Jasmine Werner, and my guest today is David Haley. Fantastic to meet you.
I'm happy to be here. Thanks for having me.
David, you are head of personnel strategy at Lab 1886.
That's right.
It's a corporate incubator of Daimler, and you create innovative business models and digital services.
That's right.
David, I know you, and I know you're a stand-up comedian. So the first question.
Sometimes.
When was the last time that you laughed very, very heartily?
Oh, this morning I laughed.
This morning, yeah.
Yeah, there was. I put on my. In the morning, I check my Twitter every morning, like every other person now. And there was some pictures of R. Kelly after he got arrested.
Yeah.
And he was crying in those pictures. Mm-hmm. And the caption was, "Who's going to do the soundtrack to Space Jam 2 now?" And
yeah.
I thought that was really hilarious.
Okay.
Oh my God. Someone also wrote, "I believe I can cry." Which made me laugh.
Yeah, okay. Got it.
It's a good morning laugh.
It's great, yeah. So imagine we both would meet up. Mm-hmm. At a meetup
in the evening. We'll meet up at a meetup?
Yeah.
Right.
So how would you describe yourself? So if I would ask you, hey, David, what do you do all day?
I would tell you I'm the people person at the lab. I would say I deal with all topics related to human beings. In terms of whether it's bringing in talent, more importantly, keeping talent.
Mm-hmm.
I would say I'm the go-to person at the lab for that.
Yeah, okay, cool. And could you describe it a bit more exactly? What do you do in your daily job?
So what we did at the... One of the things that was recognized very early at the lab is that a common mistake that's done with incubators, especially that are born out of large corporations, is that they want to innovate, but in the end, they bring the same people to try to do a different thing, right? So with the lab, what we recognize is that the people who sit at Daimler, they are experienced and they have a different skill set that is very valuable because of their knowledge base. But what was needed in order for there to be new innovation or to build in digital speed is to also leverage talent that comes from the startup world, right? So I was brought in to kind of, A, bring in people from the startup world to co-create with the people who sit in the mothership, if you will, and to see where we can leverage each other, right, in order to build the next stage, right? So what I do essentially is there's elements of talent acquisition, right? So I set the recruitment strategy, I have a recruitment team. I've been in the space for, roughly 15 years now. Worked with some of the biggest companies. I worked with Uber. I worked with gaming companies like Supercell. I worked with Spotify in Stockholm for some periods of time, and always working on project basis to help build whether it's strategy or it's actually even down to simple recruitment, right? And what I do is I built the recruitment strategy for us. Figured out and kind of was thinking about things really far ahead of the growth, which is something that people are not thinking about a lot. So we were thinking about baking in the culture, for example, already when you're still at like 4 or 5 people, already establish what type of culture you'd like to build based on your vision and based on your values. So I helped set that up as well. So this is the element which is the talent retention part, right? Amongst all this, of course, we also had the other elements like whether it's called feel good management. In the States, sometimes it's called company cheerleaders, right?
Yeah,
they have different names, but they all have to serve the same purpose, which is to ensure that you have a cohesive and happy team. So. It's in the beginning a lot of things I was doing was really understanding the people that we had, ensuring they all fit in well together, and putting in processes, which, for example, for onboarding and for putting them in the right position so they can perform. So all the matters that were not really related to, let's say, the projects, right? These were all the things that I helped establish at the lab, right? So now we have a team which does that, and I basically head up that team.
Okay, cool. How many people are working at Lab 1886?
We have three different legal entities. Let's say the German one, which is Berlin Stuttgart, we're about 75 at the moment.
75, okay. And I think it's not an internal incubator, right?
No.
You're working with external people?
No, it's when you say internal, sorry. So what I meant by that is that it is a separate GmbH, it's a mm-hmm. separate company. It's a daughter company,
yes.
Set from there. We work at our current phase, so we work with Daimler almost exclusively. We also ideate ourselves.
Mm-hmm.
In the future, of course, we have ideas about opening up to external clients, perhaps. But at the moment, we're the main incubator for Daimler.
So I would describe you as challenging the norm
mm-hmm.
in most of what you do.
Right.
So I would prefer to talk with you about recruiting.
Yes, please.
Current recruiting trends mm-hmm. and how the future of recruiting will look like.
Yes.
So maybe in general at first, what are the trends that you see in the industry?
I think there's a lot of focus now. I mean, if you want to talk on a pure, let's say, technical terms, there's a huge push towards AI-assisted recruiting. Recruiting, in essence, or just as a industry, the reason it exists is, there is a skill set behind it, but a lot of times it's because you're supposed to be saving a lot of time. That time that you're saving and also finding the right talent is worth a lot of money to a lot of people. The work in itself actually hasn't evolved that much because there's not a lot of room because people have been trying to hack recruitment for years, but in the end, because you're dealing with human beings, and human beings they just follow patterns very heavily. It moves slower than most industries. So there are people who are in this industry who are, they find that it's the same thing. You want a candidate, you look at what companies they worked at, and then you call them up, and then you tell them that you have a job. That's like an old way of working. In many ways, it's kind of the same. So we have social media platforms like LinkedIn. You see someone, you have some buzzwords, and then you send them a message and hope for the best, right? And if you think about it, it hasn't really, over 20 years, that's really not a lot of progression.
Yeah.
Right?
What do you think? What are the reasons?
Because it's human beings. Human beings are just difficult. They're just, in the end, it's you have to just break it down to how people interact at work. If you're sitting down on your desk, and then however way you slice it, it's just a person's employment is a large part of their life, right? So it's you see your colleagues more than you see your loved ones, right? So it's too deep of an emotional topic, someone's job, that you can easily and quickly just change it,
mm-hmm.
right? It's a very gradual change. So what we're seeing now is there's a lot of platforms that are already in the market, which they realize the parts that you can hack. There are parts that can be made more efficient. They do that, right? But the parts that are in the end not unhackable, but let's just say more difficult to change, those will probably never change, which is the human interaction, which is the interview. Which is, in the end, you need to speak to the person. In the end, you need to convince them that this is the right role for them. They need to feel and see other human beings like them, right? Those parts, the core elements, I think will, you can never say will never change, but will just be more resistant to change, but they'll be iterated slowly. The other elements, which is identifying candidates, for example. And then once you've identified them, contacting them. And once you've contacted them, interacting with the initial contact. All of those elements absolutely can be made more efficient because they're currently not so efficient. And they have been. That part has been. For example, you have a lot of traditional platforms like Greenhouse or Workable, etc. They've been doing a lot of work in the space, right? Because they know this is a large, large market, right? And especially with, you know, companies now having to scale faster and faster, and there's more and more money involved. You know, when you think of companies like Lime or Bird in the U.S., how fast they had to scale.
Maybe you explain a bit what Bird is doing. I know the scooters.
They're Lime and Bird are e-scooter platforms that I think, I can't remember, one or the other, which I can't remember, for the life of me, I can't remember right now. It's the fastest growing, was the fastest growing company.
Yes.
In tech history.
Mm-hmm.
It was a thing that had to scale by 800 or something within a very short period of time. So you need to really have an efficient system. It's just not simply just workforce. You need to be able to sift through a lot of, applications. You need to be able to. So what now was happening more and more is that with machine learning and AI, it's getting more and more intelligent now, in a sense. You can now set your, there are platforms now, which for example, are more specific in their search. You can set them to, you know, classically you do a Boolean search on LinkedIn and then you have to manually go through them. Now you can get very specific kind of search results. And now there's AI that can, bots that can actually interact with them to give basic information. So it could be about salaries, it could be about locations, it could be about the company, just basic information, but relatively intelligent bots, which can kind of really communicate, right? So if I'm a candidate, right, I get a message that is very specific to me, right? And it tells me that are interested in this type of work, and then I can ask questions and all my questions are answered. Then by the time I come to the first human being I'm speaking to, I have a lot of information. So now you've removed, I would say in terms of time, anything between 50 to 70% of the time is required before you have your first interview. You've removed so
much. That's a lot.
Yeah, and you've really reduced it very, very heavily. And this is obviously this is why there's a lot of investment being made into the recruitment industry. It's because it's worth billions. There's a lot of traditional recruitment companies who genuinely are not acting fast enough because they don't think it's changing, but it is, right? The other aspect which is important in terms of recruitment, which isn't just about the process, but it's about how recruitment is thought about, is that the tech industry kind of led the way in how we see employees. And so by that I mean your traditional concept of an employee in the past was, you know, a successful employee was one that, as a graduate goes to a company and then 50 years later retires with a gold watch. That's someone who did it right. And now that would be seen as a failure because that would show, for example, lack of ambition, that would show lack of even skill set in many ways, right? Because you didn't really have enough skill to even be seen anywhere else, right? The tech industry led the way in terms of understanding that you had a very finite resource of talent. So in order to keep talent, you had to be, as an employer, act differently, right? In many industries, you still have the traditional hierarchy system. You have the boss screaming at the employee kind of. There are industries like that, for example. And the tech industry it didn't have that long time ago because you try screaming at an engineer and see how long he stays with you, right? That's not to say there's not problems with it because it's also the tech industry are very, very subversive in a lot of times. You know, it's not free from problems. It's the same industry. I mean, there was an issue with Revolut, for example, where there was a memo that came out on Slack saying, well, if your team isn't doing well, I mean, have they been doing weekends, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And, everyone talks about Google and how they were like leaned away and having their Google campus was this great utopia. Well, the reality was because they had people staying there till 10 because it was, they made it comfortable. Yes, they have, you can get food whenever you want and there's a sleep pod, but the reality is there's people not going home to their families. They're staying in there. And guess what? While they're playing table tennis, they're talking about your product. So it wasn't benevolent. It was actually just a very calculated way of making people work longer, right? So it's not free from issues. But in the end, it's changed the attitude of how we see employment and how we see recruitment in some ways, right? So when you're recruiting now, it's we're moving away from this traditional way of recruiting in terms of or hiring, where you have power structure difference, right? You have three people on one side, three very senior members on one side, you in a very cold room, grilling you, asking you a lot of questions, trying to catch you on your resume. That's seen as archaic. You know, there's a lot of people who are choosing not to even be in that situation.
But that's a typical situation, actually. So
it still is. But I would say the trend is moving away from that.
Yeah.
Right? So more progressive companies, for example, will have been employing, you know, like in Silicon Valley, which has its own problems, but nonetheless have been trying to see it another way. For example, at the lab, especially German candidates, this was very surprising to them. But we have a lot of I've set some guidelines of how we should interview. I give interview workshops regularly to the team, and the idea is very simple. It's that if you want information from a candidate, grilling them isn't the right way to get that information out, for a couple of reasons. Number one, if someone's uncomfortable, they're less likely to be honest.
Yeah.
Right.
And it's stress situation.
Stress,
right?
Is this concept of stress testing.
Yeah.
It really doesn't work in terms of if you want true information, because what this test is how prepared you are. It's like an exam. Right. If you're very, very prepared in your examination, then you'll pass it. Right. So very prepared, well prepared candidates. Right. But socially well prepared, more confident ones. Right. Can easily pass your stress test. Whereas you have some, especially engineers and designers. I mean, I know it's just a stereotype and a cliche, but they're sometimes maybe not as socially confident, for example. And you trying to stress test them can make them retreat. As a personality trait. So you haven't really, if your goal in an interview is to find out the truth, or to find the true, the way this candidate thinks and some honesty, then you failed, right? You didn't get what you came in for. You didn't get information, right? What you were able to do was kind of trick them, right? So all of that is to take a step back. All that is to say is that the thinking has changed. It is changing. Right, it's a little bit slower in Germany than it is in the U.S., but it is changing. Right, so in the lab we have walking interviews. Right,
walking interviews.
Yes, it's what we do. It's when a candidate comes in, we say it's easier when it's a day like this. Right,
but a sunny day.
It's a sunny day.
Yes,
right, where we take the candidate out for a walk. Right,
and how many people?
It's usually the first time's one. Was one, because you try to make it natural as possible, but two also, right?
Then you go around the block here.
Go around the block. We walk around the block a few times.
At Friedrichstraße.
Yeah, yes, exactly. Exactly. Well, we avoid Checkpoint Charlie, because that's a lot of tourists. And very annoying. But we walk around. And what it does is that if you think about it, as soon as you're walking with someone, you're immediately less stressed.
Absolutely. I like that idea, and I could compare it to a dating situation, which is also most chilled if you just have a walk, if you don't sit somewhere next to each other.
Absolutely. Imagine the first time you ever meet someone on a date, you're sitting face to face, and now it's questions. So what do you like? What do I like? And then it's the same kind of, it's a natural almost in the beginning if you don't know someone, right?
Yes.
But when you're walking, it's kind of like, it's casual, people relax, and then in the end, you can extract information better because people are like more, they have a more positive experience, right? So they're happier to be more honest.
Yeah.
So we found that it's just one of many examples.
What comes after the walk?
Well, we don't. We sometimes we're taken for a coffee. We sometimes end up back in the office. We sit down. We have a kind of a closing chat. We frame the rest of the process for them while we're. It gets a little bit more cold, let's say, when we come back to the office and say, hey, so just for next steps, blah blah blah. Here's what we're gonna do. Here's the process. Here's what it is. But the walk itself is, we just want to have a chat, right? This has always produced better results for us. It's always been able for us to, and our feedback. We take feedback at post-interview feedbacks a lot, and even for people that weren't hired, they'd always highlight that it just was a very relaxing and I felt like an honest conversation.
Hmm. How do you get that feedback directly after the interview, or do you send emails?
We send emails. We have feedback emails. Sometimes even after every stage of the process, we'll try and get feedback because mm-hmm. this is important data for us.
Yeah, that's good. And could you share your most favorite interview question? Is there
my favorite
one that you ask every time?
I don't think there's a couple I ask every time. I have a couple. One I learned from the past, which is, I like the question, what's your favorite product?
Mm-hmm.
Which gives me an indication of a little bit about creativity, a little bit of how, let's say, what relationship have I built with this person so far, right? Yeah. When I ask someone, what's your favorite product? And if they say, let's say if we're at the lab and they want to start talking about, you know, Car2Go, or they start talking about Mercedes. By the way, it's very valid that this could be their favorite product, right? Of course, these are two wonderful brands, right? But you start thinking, okay, well, you're pandering, maybe.
Yeah, and I think it's about passion too.
Yeah, and I like the idea if someone says to me, you know, like my favorite product is Coca-Cola. You know, it's my favorite product. I've had someone say this to me lifted it from Gladwell, but I like the answer, which is he said, I like Coca-Cola because it's the best possible version of this product. And it's not expensive. And a homeless person and a president, their best cola they can have is Coca-Cola, right? And I just really like that. For example, that's for me a great answer, right? Because it's not. It's immediately went. Well, it was kind of honest, and it didn't. It's not pandering, and it's not. It's again. It's not dishonest to say those products don't work, but it's just you're talking. Now you're talking about, you know, you tell me what you think I want to hear, right? And there's bad versions of these answers too. I've had people say, oh, my favorite product is an iPhone. And then ask them, how would you improve this product? And they're like, no, I have no idea. I think it's perfect.
It's perfect.
I'm like, well, no, it's not. I'm an Android guy, so.
What is your favorite product?
My favorite product?
Yes.
It might be Coca-Cola. I'm stealing that man's answer. It's so good. I think my favorite product, I would say, is Google Maps. I like Google Maps a lot. I think it's. I feel like it's a product I use very often, and I feel it's very always secure. It's there, and it's one of the first things I will. If it's not on something I have, it's one of the first things I'll download because, you know, you're always going places, and just knowing that no matter what happens, if you have an address, you can make it. That makes it an incredible product.
Yeah, it's a great app. How did we survive?
it blows my mind.
Yeah. So I have a friend who told me he likes the question, which information I cannot find in your CV, mm-hmm. so that the candidate has to think about, okay, what is missing and what is interesting for the recruiter mm-hmm. to hear from me,
mm-hmm.
maybe which has nothing to do with my professional
right,
career.
Right. What are the things that what are the things that I couldn't see about you?
Yeah.
I would say. To me, I think it's a great question. I think it gives the person a lot of room to look into themselves mm-hmm. To see what else they have passion about. You know, there's a lot of great questions you can ask. You try not to standardize your questions. You know, you just have to think of what are the things that people help you. In the end, it is relative. You just have to remember your purpose in the interview, which is you need information, and it's not adversarial. It's not one against the other. Don't assume you have power. Don't assume that it is a bad power structure, but don't assume that you have that. Try to try to be empathetic, just be understanding the other person. You've definitely been on the other side of this table before, and what are the things that would have made you feel comfortable? You know, I tell my entire team, you know, I say, like, before every interview, but the interview partners, I always tell them, you have to, it's mandatory, you sit down 5 minutes before, you have to get there 5 minutes before with the resume, because you need to both look at it together, so that you both can discuss which way, both of you, what you're going to discuss, right? Because then your interview is structured, because then you, someone can discuss one part, the other person can discuss another. Very often I've seen in a lot of places where you go to an interview and you have two interview partners who just got pulled out of a project, who just came out of nowhere, the first time they see your CV, and they look at it, and there's just, and then the person on the other side who is being interviewed, is he can see that this is his life, and here's two people who have put very little thought into helping decide that.
Yeah, I have the same experience. So preparation is key for the recruiter.
Of course, it's the least.
It saves a lot of time. And so I had in former times a lot of experiences when I was the candidate in interviews.
Right.
That I noticed, okay, they see my CV the first time now. Yeah. And that's a bit frustrating, because I'm thinking that they are looking forward to meet me and that they are already informed. But
well, it's also, you feel, you know, again, it's very strange that there's any company that doesn't invest heavily in talent.
Yeah.
Because if you think to yourself, it's your greatest asset for any company, right, is your talent. But specifically for tech companies, you know, you are literally building something, value out of nothing. And I always tell the story about a lot of clients I used to have about when they weren't sure about how much they wanted to invest in talent, right? About WhatsApp, you know, I always tell them, you know, WhatsApp was, I think the total number of people that were, by the time it was sold, was, I don't know, it must be under 100 people. And I don't know the exact figures right now, right? But it was sold for like 13 billion, right? And if you think to yourself, Just some human beings were in a building, and then suddenly they were on some laptops, and now you have 13 billion, right? Whereas if you imagine, if you in the past, if you wanted to make that kind of money, imagine you're an oil company, you'd have to have treaties with governments, you'd have to have equipment, you have all these different things. So many parts have to align for you to make, to build value. Yep. Whereas these human beings build you value, right? So when you are bringing someone in and you don't take 5 minutes to look at their CV just so you can, to see how much value they can bring into you, if you don't invest your time, your effort, and your money into talent, then I don't understand. Then guess what? That fridge full of matcha is not going to do it for you.
Let's take a step back.
Sure, I love to take a step back.
We were already in the interview
part.
So I'm very interested at the lab.
Mm-hmm.
How do you use AI bots, maybe targeted job profiles, not job profiles, how do you say it? Job advertisements?
Yeah. I mean, we use multiple channels. We can't discuss too deeply into our internal processes, but I can tell you what we're constantly trying to improve our processes as well, right? So I'm lucky enough that early stage there was recognition that talent's important. So at the lab there was a lot of investment in terms of whether it's software, whether it's tools, whether it's all the things that would make us the most efficient. And some of these, the future is being more involved with AI. It's there's minor parts, like, you know, automatic emails being sent back with acknowledgement, for example. But overall, the industry is getting there, but the industry standard isn't there yet.
Mm-hmm.
So there's a lot of companies out of San Francisco trying out this stuff, but I would say that we are in the early stages of using a lot of technology.
What do you think? What should be more digitized in recruiting?
I think I think identification of talent, at least the early parts of it. I would say if we can digitalize and the information, that's a weird way of putting it, but providing specific information to, as I mentioned before, to candidates. I think just the parts that are not the human-centric parts, you know, the parts where you're not, it's not about the interview, it's not about understanding if the person's a team fit, the parts about, let's say, salary negotiations, etc. Those parts aside, that like once you've agreed to, let's say you've agreed to, you know, sign a candidate, that from that part you can have a system that a fully digital HR system that can create contracts, can, you know, you can, they can send it out, they can have you know, alert everybody and all and also be, you know, compliant and legal, you know, even if it needs let's say some supervision, but overall can be done almost fully digitally. That would make things much faster.
Yeah, absolutely. So I have a quote here. Mm-hmm. Robots cannot drink coffee. I think that's at the end. They can drink. That's what you meant right now, right? So
right.
The good sorting is not working without the people.
No, it's. I think that, yeah. And you can make it. You can more and more automated. You can make it more and more efficient. But in the end, you know, I've seen some companies attempt to really, really digitalize the entire process with software engineers, where, you know, you apply for a job and then you get a coding test, and the coding test is kind of reviewed, I think, and then it's almost all of the process is done kind of outside of, without the use of, up until the end, which is, to me, it's a, I don't think that in the end works, because it hasn't really worked for a lot of people, right? In the end, you need to be able to speak to people, because it's not about just how well you can code, it's about, this is your code for something that people can understand and work with, right?
And to wrap it up, how would you decide? What do we need more? Do we need more people or more technology in recruiting at the end?
Do we need to use more, a bigger team, or do you see more technology? I think for sure more technology. Mm-hmm. You don't need, I think, you know, there's a lot of bloat in recruitment that is already being replaced through technology. And I guess it's the classic argument, right? It's the classic fear people have. But I think people who are good at recruitment are good with people. And if you're good with people, there'll never be a point where you can't find work. So if tomorrow I wasn't in recruitment, if I wasn't with, I think there's always value for understanding how human beings work and what provides an atmosphere for better efficiency.
Mm, yeah, absolutely.
Yeah.
So for the end of the interview, I have prepared some personal questions.
Okay, go.
Just to get to know you a bit better.
Let's go.
So imagine from tomorrow on, mm-hmm. you have 1 year paid holidays. Mm-hmm. What would you do?
What would I do?
Yeah.
That depends. Like almost every question, the answer is always, it depends, I guess. I guess like everybody else, travel. I think part of that time would be spent traveling. I'm really into coffee, not just the drinking process, but I like
coffee lover.
But not just drinking it in that sense. I was at one point involved in coffee growing and roasting.
Cool.
with a certain partner of mine. So I think I'd kind of maybe do some coffee-related stuff.
Start your own little project.
Maybe I would. Yeah. It also depends how much money you save at this point, you know.
Okay, so money isn't important.
Is important.
Yeah, absolutely. what else? What topic would you speak about if you were asked to give a TED Talk on something outside of your main area of experience, so it shouldn't have something mm-hmm. to do with
not
recruiting?
Well, not recruiting, but I think I'd really want to, I definitely want to talk about, I'm very fascinated by the paradox of choice. I'm always fascinated that we have a lot of options. We have the most options, but we're less happy. And I think I'd definitely want to explore that. Read a lot on that, and I think I may have something to say on that. But I would also like to give a TED talk of how you need to coddle your employees.
To coddle your employees?
To a coddle. Your Maybe don't cuddle them. That's probably not HR compliant.
What does it mean?
It means to understand that you, you know what? Some of them are, some of them are spoiled, right? Yeah. But and that's fine. Mm-hmm. Yeah, but you should always just think of your end game. You think of what you're trying to build, and if you're able to build so by, let's say, investing a little bit in your employees, then that's absolutely okay. It's just an investment towards a larger return.
Yeah, okay, got it. What have you changed your mind about in the last few years? Is there something that comes to your mind?
What have I changed my mind about?
If yes, why?
What have I changed my mind about? I changed my mind a lot on stuff. Kanye West. I really changed my mind on Kanye West.
So what do you think about him now?
I think I may have been one of his last defenders that is not a Trump supporter.
Yeah.
So I think I used to love his music a lot, and I probably still love his music, but I think he's just gone over the line for me.
Mm. Yeah. I have that music video in my mind where he's with this with this outfit, which I will cut it down.
Which outfit?
Cut it out. The square, like.
Oh yeah, that's yeah, 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 yeah. That particular, that's one of the beginnings of the ends. Yes. Went with him and Lil Pump.
Yes. Yes. I mean that. Okay, cool. So, have you any last parting words for my audience or something you want?
Yeah, first I want to thank you for having me on.
Yeah,
I think if there is one thought I'd like to leave anybody listening to this, is that thinking of recruitment as just bringing people onto your organization is in itself it's a little bit self-defeating. I think that when you think of talent acquisition, you should always think of talent retention from day one. I think that your first call with a candidate is day one of you trying to keep them in your organization. So always planning ahead in terms of how you represent yourself, what the person feels about your organization. If you're very focused on that and you really genuinely believe in it, in the end, you'll create an atmosphere, I think, that would want people to have a lot of options in a very, very competitive market, really want to stay with you. So number one reason people want to stay in a company is they love the team.
Yeah.
So number one reason.
Or the boss.
Or the boss. Well, less and less. Well, if they see the team, if you are a good boss, they wouldn't say the boss. They would say the team because you're part of the team.
Yeah.
Right? So in the end, I would say understanding that talent acquisition and talent retention are almost the same thing. If you just keep, they're very, very close, and you have to think of them early. And I would say, and one more thing I'd say is, when you're building a business, if you think to yourself that if you don't wait too long before you bring in someone who's a specialist in bringing talent, because the earlier you bring this talent, just imagine how much better your first 10 employees probably determine the success of your business, right? And if you had someone that can really help you select the best possible 10 according to your budget at a very early stage, you stand a better chance of succeeding. So I know that's self-serving. It makes my own job or my own industry be more important, but I genuinely believe in that, and you cannot defeat my logic.
Great. Cool. Thank you very much. Thanks
for
your time.
Thank you very much.